Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, high school tennis fans. This is your host, Coach Denise, bringing you the FHS-TCA perspective on high school tennis. Great day in Florida today. I think we have another outstanding show for you. I apologize for last week and missing the show. Those of you that know me and know that I'm computer illiterate, probably suspect I goofed up, but I don't think we did. I think the mistake was in Houston this time, but I just couldn't get in. And we've been blessed to have some great guests on our show lately, and Frank Giambolo would have been a great shot. He has a great book out, but he's promised to come on another time. And I apologize for not having you there. A lot of you are still talking about Linda LeClaire and Dr. Bryce Young's show. I really thank them so much for being on the show. Those of you looking to get any of their communications, you can go right online to them. And, of course, excuse me a second. The week before, we had Dave Fish from Harvard on. And this week, we're blessed to have another college coach on. We're blessed to have a legend on, actually. And I just want to first go into some business. As you know, we're always talking about high school tennis is more than a coach. It's more than athletic director. It's more than players and parents. It's a community. And those of you that didn't get involved this year in submitting your nomination, it is too late. Last week was the last day, but with Dean Street Insurance, we will be passing out a Community Service Award at our December 10th, 11th, and 12th FACA workshop in Daytona Beach, and that should be pretty special. And those of you that support our All-Star Tournament each year and you see how well our coaches and players look, that's because of Team Connection Clothiers. They are the clothier for the FHSTCA, and they will be supplying free uniform to a team in 216. All year long, we ran a play it forward, so that people were able to gather points to be able to get free uniforms for their upcoming teams, because we all really stand on the shoulders of somebody else. So that will be given out in December at the same time. And Wilson Sports will be joining us in passing out the 2015 Coach of the Year Awards, and we'll be passing those awards out in the FHSAA 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A divisions. So we will be recognizing all the divisions there. We're proud to have them. I was a little disappointed, I must say. We had more than enough coaches nominated for the awards, but I thought we would have at least twice as many. I thought it would make a hard on us. I'm always saying if you're unhappy with your coach's experience at high school, don't take up your child's time at the tennis court Well, set up an appointment with him, set up an appointment with your athletic director, and, let your grievances out. And this is how we get better, truthfully. But if you have an outstanding coach, you should be looking to nominate that coach. And I thought, quite frankly, while we had a couple of dozen nominations in the state of Florida, I thought we would have a lot more. But that we'll work on that. Please thank your coaches and take time to get involved in tennis because tennis is where it's at. And high school tennis, in my humble opinion, and I do admit to being biased, is where we need to grow the tennis more, where we can do so much more, because this is the future of tennis. They're in high school now. Our future college players are in tennis. Our future tennis pros are in tennis. Our future USTA volunteers are in high school now. So we need that pathway to continue on. And today I'm excited to have somebody on that is going to talk about that there. And let me see if he is on before I go too far. Chuck, are you there?
Hey, yeah. Hello, John. How are you?
Good. If you were to bear with me for a couple more minutes, because I'd like to, I would say, properly introduce the legend. Coach Chuck Riese is somebody that, in my opinion, and we share his show on our network a lot because I really do believe that we're able to sit there. His educational aspects of teaching, his training, is something when I first got involved, I went to. I just came in, as many of you know, an old tennis pro. Came from the basketball world and coaching high school basketball. And it was in the early 80s. It was in the mid-80s, I guess. I started thinking of, rather than just be a tennis pro, I'd really want to get into the coaching aspect of it. And the USTA was starting to promote a couple programs, LEP programs. So I went to the Total Tennis Training, a book that Coaching Tennis by Chuck Riese. Some of you probably know I'm a lousy librarian. I give away books all the time to our players. I was never a big trophy person. You have to go out when your reward is, learning from your match, either winning it or learning from what you have to do to get better. But being a lousy librarian, I've given away so many books, but I still have Coaching Tennis, which I'm just looking at now. It came out in 1988, and it's still in my library because I'm not sure if it was 88 or 89, but Coach Greasy blessed me with signing the book, so... Of all the books you can borrow from my library, that is one you cannot borrow because I really believe that today it is still a very important book. If you're looking to go out and coach tennis, I know I go back to it a lot just to refresh myself or just a question or something will come up and might be a little different. Let me go back and revisit this here. I think one of the misconceptions of coaches is they have a routine and they stay with it all the time. I think most good coaches are continuously trying to get better and trying to learn. And there's no better place, in my opinion, than with Coach Chuck Riese. So, Coach, I know you well enough to know that you're not going to sit there and brag about yourself, but I wanted to make sure that the people knew a little something about you anyway, those that don't. So it's your show today, Coach. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions, but first, what would you like to start the show off with? Telling us something about yourself, hopefully.
No, just thank you for what you do, John, and thanks to Jason Haynes for the UR Tennis Network, and we have a medium now that talk and express their ideas. They can share their ideas. They can voice their opinions, and all those things are very, very important. And but thank you for your show. You have such a great following, and you're doing great work, especially for high school tennis, which I said to you before, it really is the sleeping giant, one of the sleeping giants in American tennis. And, you know, but thank you for having me on, and it's definitely my pleasure.
Well, we're blessed to have you on, and I agree with you, and we've had that discussion, and I think if we get the word out and continue to talk about it, maybe it won't be a sleeping giant forever, and hopefully it's not going to be too long before the USTA gets involved. Before we get started, though, because I appreciate you taking time to talk about high school tennis, but how about telling us a little bit about Citadel and you know, what goes on there in South Carolina?
Sure. I was very fortunate and blessed that 33 years at Clemson University. I started in 1975, and my golly, I was 25 years old. I had no idea why they hired 25. It was just, it was one of those things that just worked out perfectly, and how I got the job. But, just scrambled and tried to develop a good team. And, you know, I'm going to refer back to those early years because I really did the most important tournament that I can remember ever going to recruit. Used to go my first 5 to 10 years over to Tampa to that Florida State High School tournament they had over there. And the amount of players that played Florida State High School tennis and the depth was incredible. And, you know, you try to label things, John, but I always felt like if I got one of the top 15 people in the state of Florida, I had a great player. But, boy, my first All-American, Mike Gandolfo from Lakeland, Florida, do you know, John, he was only 23 in the state of Florida, and within, what a worker he was, and he became our first All-American. He became National Senior Player of the Year for the whole United States within 4 years. He was 23 in the state of Florida when I recruited him. Relentless work ethic, but I got young players like John Desdunes and Rick Rudine was a late starter. He was a two-time All-American at Clemson. He actually still has the record for the most wins in history of college tennis. He had such a good win. He won over 170 singles matches, and well, we played a lot. But the point being I'm making, John, is that the Florida State High School tournament was probably the tournament that I would not miss. And also there was a great tournament, Florida State Hard Court in Ocala. That was a great recruiting tournament. But Florida was a hotbed, and it still is a hotbed for talent. But I wanted to make that point because it has changed quite a lot, the high school aspect. And I want to, with all respect, I want to, you know, be able to talk a little bit about just some ideas and some thoughts about how you might be able to regain your clout or your, you know, mojo or whatever you want to say. But it really was always a fantastic place. I can remember Gainesville, Florida. My golly, they had on one high school team that Jeff Brown, who was coaching at LSU now, they had, John Ross, Ed Ross. They had, University of Tennessee, two players that ended up, that their top six guys all played D1 college there at Gainesville. And I remember Real Baxter, he was there too. His brother, I think, coached there. Oh, my golly, the depth was incredible. And you had that all throughout Florida. But just to give you an idea, the number 23-ranked player in the state of Florida, and this was before the academy days now, the number 23-ranked player ended up becoming National Senior Player of the Year. And he got up to 75 in the world, actually in doubles. But the depth was so good. But I did 33 years there at Clemson, and then I was done, John, with college coaching. I put in my 10,000 days, and it's very frustrating toward the end. And I'll share about that, why it became frustrating. But it was mainly the overregulation of college tennis, the reduction of practice hours, reduction of match play, just basically too many regulations over initiative. And, you know, you would never put regulations over a musician in the band or the orchestra and say you can only play the violin 3 hours a day and 20 hours a week and you can only do this. But in college tennis, the regulations, you know, just really cramp trying to develop players, which was always our forte. I always tried to recruit good athletes, John, who were hungry to be great players, and we were able to put several. I mean, we had, over the years at Clemson, we had 9 top 100 in the world players that went through our program at Clemson. We had 43 players play professional tennis, 36 All-Americans, 4 National Players of the Year, National Senior Player of the Year. And the point being is that I'm very proud that we were really known as a training ground if you wanted to play professional tennis. With that, we graduated all of our guys. So I didn't want to throw that in, but the guys basically, John, they came to Clemson and knew that, hey, listen, they just had a culture of we're going to outwork everybody. And once that culture stuck and people knew we were outworking everybody, it really carried a lot of clout with it. So I was done, John, in 2008. I retired after 33 years. Mainly, the biggest thing was they started making me cut players. And I want to talk about the no-cut situation because I didn't cut players for my first 20-some years. If you could reach the standard at the track of making the mile time, we had a 5:15 mile or 5:20 mile, 5:20 toward the end. But we always had a standard that if you wanted to play tennis at Clemson, you had to be very, very fit. You knew that coming in as a freshman. And if you were a top player and you couldn't make the mile time, you sat the bench or you trained until you could make it. And we had every player make it over the years. And we had several players that I always used to say that I only kicked off 4 players over 33 years, 2 for drugs, 2 for stealing, which you have to do. Those are the 2 unforgivables. And but the point being is we probably had 60 or 70 quit just because of the training standards. So the bar was set. We didn't lower the bar. The culture was if you wanted to play professional tennis, if you wanted to go after maximizing your potential, you go to Clemson. And we absolutely, John, we had a situation where I'd had the players on the team. So the top 10 or 12 were the varsity. Everybody else was the orange team and the white team and the work team. But the white team and the work team trained every day like nobody's business. And every week, 1 or 2 of them could bump off the varsity guys and move up into the varsity and get in their shoes. And if you got bumped off the varsity, you had 2 choices. You either work to get back on or you bail out. And We have some beautiful stories of players. Richard Matuszewski, who was two-time, got up to 46 in the world. He started out way down the line, like number 12 or something like that, and got to, 46 in the world as a player. Kent Kinnear, who got to 2 in the world in doubles, he started out like 10 or 12 on the team and worked his way through, and several situations, just beautiful stories of a high school basketball player that was on the JV squad, and they worked themselves through, and they ended up being contributors. And literally, I had a all-state football basketball player that was terrible in tennis become the team captain one time in 1997, a young man named Clay Faust. We had a conference championship team, and Clay was literally an all-state. He was a great football basketball player, and in his whole freshman year, I sent him to the wall to practice on the wall. That was his practice, but he made his mile time, so he always reached the standard. So after Clemson, what happened, John, and I'm trying to set the table so we can talk about this high school situation.
Before you leave Clemson, though, I'd like to just make one point, and then please continue on. But long before there was a no-cut program, you had a no-cut program, and you still had 25 or so players on there, which means that everybody knew, what it was to play at Clemson. They knew, all the colleges that played Clemson knew they were in for a fight no matter what. You better plan on playing for the whole day. So those players there, you still had people that wanted to play for Clemson. And the point is, I think that, if you're striving for excellence, fun is important. I try to make practices fun. But if the key ingredient is excellence, I don't think we necessarily – I'm not criticizing the no-cut program. I think there's merit to what the USTA does, but I think there's potential problems, and I'll talk later because I've experienced one of those. But go back to what you were saying, please.
Well, you make great points, John. Listen, I never cut a player, but we had a bar set, and they cut themselves. And that's the
right point.
There was a standard of excellence that we never, ever wavered from. And if you wanted to play, you could be number one in the country, or you could be number 5,000 in the country and be a football, basketball player, and you could make the Clemson team if you made a 5:15 mile all those times. And anybody that's been a runner, I was a runner, so I know exactly what the standard was for the runner. And a 5:15, I backed it down to 5:20 because everybody can make that as a tennis player if you train. Nobody can make it. Very few make it. If you can't, don't train. And still at Citadel today, our standard is a 5:25, and the thing is I have three players right now, very good players, dying to play, but they haven't made their mile time yet. So they're still training to get it. But the bar is set. This is the important thing, that I had up to 25 players. I had as few usually as 13 to 15. But I had as many as 25. There's stories of those young men contributing to the welfare of the program. Now, the point I want to make is this. No-cut programs are fine if you have a standard of excellence that everyone has to meet. Otherwise, if you don't, it means nothing to be on the program. It becomes an after-school activity instead of a varsity sport. We had have a tough, tough varsity sport. And with that, tennis is a running sport, by the way. I had a couple very good junior college chancellors one time. They came in and they'd had it pretty soft in junior college. And they said, well, what does this have to do with running, with tennis? I said, it has everything. It's a running sport. Or it has nothing to do with tennis, but it has everything to do with tennis. But it's just the fact here, as a coach out there, if you're listening, you need to decide the bar of excellence And if you establish it, sure, you'll have some kids go, oh, I don't want to try. But the kids that get over the bar will be proud. And the dumbing down, I call what we're doing in American tennis a lot Project Dumbing Down or Project Dumb Down, because of the participation trophies and all of those things. But let me tell you, when I left after 33 years, 10,000 practices I conducted, I figured, coached over 1,150 matches. But when I decided to retire, it was primarily over the fact that they made me start having to cut players, not for a good reason, but just because of the proportionality of the balance. Proportionality, those coaches out there understand what that is. Because the women only had 10 players, we could only have 10. And the absolute problem with that, and I used to argue with the Title IX guy all the time, I said, they can only get 8 to 10 to come out for the team. Okay, I could have 25 players that would want to play. And the point being is that they give them 20 opportunities. There's a difference between an opportunity to play and actually playing. And I used to argue with the Title IX guy, and I would say opportunities to compete is not the same as bodies in the seat, which means that, look, just because they only have 10, don't tell because women won't play or men can't play. That was absolutely, and I wanted to say the Title IX is a great law, very poorly implemented because it was never meant to cut up boys' sports or men's sports. It was never meant for that. So the point is, twice my last 3 years at Clemson, I had to cut the number one ranked player in the state of South Carolina, great athlete, because he was the number 11 guy on the team. And that pushed me, goes, whoa! And you've got to understand my logic here, John. At Clemson is pretty much, it's a fantastic athletic place and everything, but it's 100 miles from Atlanta, 100 miles from Charlotte, 100 miles really from any hubs of tennis. Therefore, I always had my recruiting base was my JV squad. I trained those guys, got them ready, and every year one of those 15 extra guys became a great recruit as a sophomore and or a junior, and they contributed. That way I only had to recruit one top player. Typically we would lose recruits to Florida. We would lose recruits to Texas to, you know, gosh, LSU is a fantastic place down there. We would lose recruits to the California schools, lose to Georgia, which is a tough one. Georgia's a fantastic program. But we always had to start with typically players that were not yet finished as players, and the physical fitness component was a big part of it. Now, John, last thing I'll say here, and then I don't want to monopolize too much, but the critical thing in college tennis that really has been a very telling negative thing was about 1992 was when all of the overregulation came in and the NCAA, wait a minute, you can only play 20 hours a week, you can only play 25 matches a year. Whoa, 25, are you kidding me? Baseball played 66. Tennis is a repetition sport, repetition. People ask, what do you have to be good? I said, only three things, repetition, repetition, repetition. It's a repetition sport, John. So when they brought all that stuff in, we coaches started scrambling, started recruiting highly international players everywhere that were already done. They might have been on tour for a while. We had a lot of problems with overage international players playing. We had a lot of situations where players that had already played professional tennis and taken money were playing. And this squeezed out a lot of our American kids. Just like the academy movement probably in Florida has squeezed a lot of the high school kids out of their high school positions, that this all changed because they wouldn't let you outwork anybody anymore. There's a saying that I always bring up with some of the schools. There's many places that will recruit talent and not work with it. But there's a saying, it's all right to be smarter than your hound dog. You don't have to outrun them. In other words, they would base things on talent and opportunities, but the desire and hard work, you know, they weren't going to catch us. I'm very disappointed. I think we had it really rolling for 13 years. We only lost 2 ACC matches. We're top 10 in the country every year. The thing that really hurt us was when they wouldn't let us outwork people. And then it comes down to recruiting internationals, you know, the sort of hybrid programs that you see today where the players come in, they're recruited, and, you know, they're recruited and they're in and out. And the proof's in the pudding, too. If you look at the amount of pros that we turn out of college tennis, it's very disappointing. You figure, John, we have 100 youngsters a year probably are recruited to top schools around the country. And if you look at the last 10 years, probably 1,000 youngsters on the boys' side, 1,000 on the women's side have gone to college. Out of that group, why, it's been 20 years since, say, Gretchen Rush or, you know, a couple of Florida girls, you know, made it to the pros. We had a girl, Alina Falcone, I think, at Georgia Tech, made top 100. On the boys' side, it's almost non-existent. The American players that go to college now, they just go to college, and you think about maybe 5 or 6 out of those thousand kids that went to college. So, John, it's very, very frustrating. Regulation, it should never be a dumbed-down tool, Project Dumbdown. And we have some issues we got to solve. So there's ways to still get people better, and there's ways to really streamline development. But, you know, I'd like to elaborate on that in a few minutes here. But we really need some different format issues, because instead of a Lawson Duncan that I coached having a record of 69-17 his freshman year, or a Jay Berger, he had 58-21, I think, his freshman year. I mean, that's a lot of reps. Instead of having those reps, which you need in baseball too, and they get them, the kids' records are now like, you know, 15-8, and things like that. And so, you know, it's just not, you can sense the frustration that I've had in college. But we're here to talk about high school, and I really want to get on to that and try to talk to high school coaches about what you can do to help players. It is the sleeping giant, high school tennis, and so maybe we could move on to that.
Well, so, we will, but it's just I think it boils down to, and I've heard you say it many times, and indirectly, most of us coaches, we talk about, you know, when setting goals and everything, you know, if it's not working, don't change your goal, change your plan. And why we would take this great game and feel we have to change it, you know, are we changing it to make it better? No, we're changing it because we think there's a few more dollars could be made here, or we could cut some dollars here. And this is, you know, one of the problems, and college is feeling it now, but high school is feeling it too. And if, quite frankly, if it isn't going to be addressed, then, you know, mediocrity will become the norm. And is that really what we want? And I know, and I'm not going to mention name, but I know heads of state USTA organizations, and more important than proper training is getting numbers in, how to get more people involved in tennis. And we do a great job of bringing people into tennis, but what do we do once they, you know, we got them hooked? And as a high school coach, you know, one of the arguments that I always had sitting on the board of the Florida USTA, and I always told Doug Booth he really needed me on the board, because every good board should have 10% of the board should be people that are always challenging. And so I was all he had. I used to tell Doug, you need me,
yeah,
you just don't know it. But you know, what do we do as a high school coach when you tell somebody, you know, well, we can't do this for you because we got to have less games. Our practices. How do we sit there and, you know, tell somebody you have the potential, but maybe you should go to another sport to achieve that potential as a coach?
John, a couple quick things here. There is a confusion about participation versus performance objectives, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's where the stem is. There is an ideology that the more people we have in participation, somehow that will breed excellence. Participation never breeds excellence, but that will always breed participation. And the hook that you get in kids' mouth, we're fishing with a barbless hook right now. In other words, it slips in, slips out. The kids do not get hooked on things that are too easy. Easy to pick up, easy to put down. Hard to pick up, it's hard to put down. Once you lower the standard on anything, I don't care whether it's music, academics, basketball, football, baseball, tennis, art, anything, it becomes something that is easy to put down. And this is the tragedy that we have. Sign-ups, and I think you alluded to this, you expressed this well, that we have 350,000 youngsters play high school tennis, John, participate. We only have 17,000, that's 7% or 6% of those actually become tennis players, where they play tournaments in the summer. So it has become an after-school activity, like the bowling club or the chess club, or, you know, this is a tragedy because you cannot reap the fruit of your labor in this sport. It is not a shallow sport. The dumb down, Project Dumb Down, USTA, I'm calling you guys out if you're listening. You know, and I couldn't care less at this stage in life if they like me or don't like me. No, but you guys, to be ashamed of yourself for the dumbing down. You know, you have chess and you're making it into checkers. You got fly fishing, you're making it into bait casting. You know, you do not dumb down this great sport that we have had for 132 years. The traditional scoring's been 132 years. And now we all of a sudden are becoming enlightened that we're going to go to no ad scoring, abbreviated sets, and all this, but it becomes non-challenging for the youngsters. It does not challenge their intellect, does not challenge their heart, does not challenge their physical fitness. So it becomes like a participation trophy, John. And the children who get participation trophies, after they have a few, they quickly throw them in the trash can, and then, unfortunately, that's what they're doing with their tennis careers. But we can do better, and I want to elaborate and talk on that. But golly, it's a very frustrating. And in college tennis, the same. College tennis, same. Kids get off the bus when they finally get to go to college. And wow, I've reached my Shangri-La. You know, I finally reached that one shining moment for myself, my career. I get to go to college and play tennis, and they get off the bus, and instead of looking at it as a stepping stone to professional tennis, are just, more importantly, John, becoming all they can be in this wonderful, great sport. You know, I mean, maximizing the God-given ability. Yesterday on my show was called Avoiding Tweenerism yesterday on the American Tennis Program. Coach Randy Blumenthal last week, his program. By the way, John, did that come out all week? All right. That show,
I missed yesterday's show. I looked for it and I didn't, because I always share your shows.
It's not up yet. It'll come up. But the point is, John, this is an epidemic in the United States, but let me make this point. It is an ideology problem. Whether you call it socialism versus capitalism. Look, competition is not a socialistic endeavor. You don't start
right.
out with 32 players in professional tennis and divide up all of the money between. You don't give trophies to everybody. You need to give one trophy, maximum two, to the kids who really, and then they become something of value. And it is an ideology. Everybody wants to be nice, and everybody trying to work on kids' self-esteem. The dumbing down, Project Dumb Down that the USTA is doing with these scoring systems, it is a very, very bad thing. You know, but high school, we can do better. It's the sleeping giant.
What are some of the things, coaches, that you recommend? I told everybody that the one thing, coaches is probably more opinionated than me, and he believes we have some solutions, and I am for solutions. How about before I ask you that, one of my problems is, you know, talking to the USTA High Performance and everything, we're talking about them coming in and doing a high school, university, everything, and yet the people that they're not looking for is the High School Coaches Association to contribute. You know, when we have the Chuck Creases in college and everything, why do we need somebody that is, you know, maybe a great administrator in another sport to come in and run college? Or why do we need people outside of the high schools to come in and tell high schools what they need to do? And I truthfully have a problem with that, but I'm not, you know, preaching.
You should have. You should have, John. They don't have any skin in the game. And it's just the typical type of thing, and administrators out there at USTA. I went to the USTA meeting. They brought in about, oh, golly, John, they brought in about 200 people to this meeting in Florida, went to Orlando. They brought in about four or five consultants. Okay, now these consultants are brought in nowadays because a leader, let's say it's a high school principal, or let's say it's a leader at the USTA or president, they bring in consultants. Number one, oh, wow, we're getting this expert, this consultant in. But you give up accountability. In other words, if the consultant works out, you get credit. If it doesn't work out, their idea was bad. So it's really thing about leadership nowadays that people, could you imagine me getting hiring an assistant coach? I go to a consultant instead of, you know, having the accountability to do it myself, or I go to a recruiting consultant where, you know, it's somebody else's fault if they do. So that's the problem. These consultant guys are really don't have enough skin in the game to care at a level. Now, I can give you last 2 days I spent time with one of my former players. He currently has coached one of the top players in the world in juniors. And on the women's side, he's coaching a 16-year-old girl that's already top 300 in the world. They both are being coached and they are being tutored. Their travel coach is a USTA person. And the USTA person doesn't have skin in the game from day one. This coach I was with, he has skin in the game since they were one of the players, since he was 5 years old, and the other with girls since they were 11. They both called him last night when I was there. One of them is our great, great, being the one of the, they're both great hopes for the United States of America. Both of them called this guy. Now, the point I want to make is that when you have these coaches that travel around with our players and they don't have enough skin in the game, they do window dressing coaching a lot of times, and that they don't make the broth. They just put a little salt and pepper in here and there, and I'm not saying that's all bad, but they can't care to the level that they need to care enough. So that's that's my observation about you guys, too, that with your kids, they come in and sort of tell you what to do, and that's baloney. That's malarkey. They don't have enough skin in the game. They don't understand. Nobody cares what you know unless they know that you care. You know, but high school, here's what we've done. And I don't know how much time we got here. I don't want to be too long-winded for you, John, but high school tennis.
Coach, you have plenty of time, Coach. I took the liberty of putting us on for an extra half hour because, quite frankly, what you have to say is important.
Want to get to the meat of things and talking to the high school coaches there. But all of the coaches out there, I want to make a couple statements here. First of all, if it's important to you, it's important. So, right, if it's important to any kid. But the thing is, remember, easy to pick up, easy to put down, hard to pick up, hard to put down. You need to make a standard. If you even have no cut, you still need standards where the kids, it is some value. Just like not getting cut in high school basketball or football and things that makes the big deal. But here's the deal. We have a sport that is an individual sport that has a lot of good team opportunities. But hear me out, John. It is not a team sport where we have individual, we do some individual things here and there. Now, what am I saying? Well, the team part of it, where we line up and play as a team, that's great. It's a great camaraderie, the socialization, all those relationships you make on your high school team. However, team tennis is about the worst thing going for player development. And there's many, many reasons for it. But tournament tennis does not have the socialization or the camaraderie factors that team tennis does, but it is by far better for player development. And I'll quickly explain this. In team tennis, you might go all year. If you're the number five player on the team or three player on the team, you go the whole year and you only play against people that are right at your level, John.
Right.
Good or bad. You know, in a tournament, the kids, well, the first two rounds, they play someone less than their level. The middle rounds, players at about their level, and the semis and finals, players above their level if they're playing at their level. They can springboard and have exponential growth in one weekend. Players, one weekend, a player can get your number four player, gets hot, they win the tournament, and all of a sudden they're at a completely different paradigm. They are at a completely different level. So they grow exponentially through the opportunities to grow exponentially through tournament tennis, and you only fall arithmetically. In other words, if you lose the first round 3 weeks in a row, you just go back and work. You come back. I hate losing first round. You come back and work, come back and win. Then, bang, you might break through. And so you only fall arithmetically. It is the opposite with team tennis. You only grow arithmetically. You can go 7-0 and number five singles or three singles and people still, it does nothing to build.
Right.
You only grow arithmetically. When you fall, if you're the last person out there and you lose match for your team, a lot of times you fall geometrically. Now, so I've experienced both. In the best developmental period of college tennis, we were able to do both, John. We got the team situation where the team camaraderie and everything. We played six singles, three doubles, all two out of three sets, and it was fantastic. So the kids could get up to six sets in one day. A lot of your high school coaches go, whoa, that doesn't make sense because of our limitations and our logistics. But the point is we had plenty of team opportunities, but then we had tournament opportunities as well. And the tournament opportunities, always, I would try to make it. I always said by February 30th or March 1st, I always tried to play enough tournaments at different levels where every guy in the top eight won a tournament at some level to make his springboard. Right now, I just talked to a coach in the SEC today riding home here. He has a player that was 6 5 weeks ago. He won the tournament, our open tournament at the Citadel. He won the South Carolina State Intercollegiate, and he knocked off the number two seed for the whole region, 1-1. This weekend he goes to Georgia, and he's going to play number one or two. And that's what tournament tennis does.
Right.
You know, the opposite of that is the coach was talking also about his number two player last year. They had matches against some lesser teams, and they were the last people out there, and they made him play a 10-point tiebreaker. The kid took two bad losses to lesser players, and he sort of went down the tubes for a month or so. And, you know, that this is the tragedy in this regulation where you can only play so many matches. Think about what we're doing when we do that. And most of this was pushed through, and I'm just going to say that Ivy League guys up there, you Ivy League guys, you have a limit of 18 matches and you don't like it, that people were playing 40 matches or something, and they just basically fought hard to get all this. The ITA was the culprit in this whole thing, in the dumbdown. And they sort of know how I feel about what they did for 30 years or so. And so I you guys up there, the dumbdown of college tennis, you got the daggone mediocrity on your hands for the dumbdown. And so, John, here's what I think. I think of all the places, Texas might have the best system.
I like Texas.
I love it. They still have all their best kids still play high school tennis. But here's what they do. They play team tennis probably 6 to 8 weeks in the fall, and they have that team camaraderie and everything. But by Thanksgiving, it's done. And then they play tournaments, all boys and girls. Instead of separating, you could do boys and girls. You do a hybrid there. I'm very much against mixed teams. What I mean is that you play team matches in the fall. You could do on different days or whatever. You have your team. You could switch it up. You could have the boys team in the fall, tournament in the spring, or vice versa. But I think, John, it'd be very good to check out what Texas is doing. They really turn out some good players. And
I'm a big supporter of the Texas program, and I brought it up in Florida. And I think it's, we know what the problem is, the extra cost and everything, but, I mean, if we really care about tennis, this is what I say, throwing
the... John, as a coach, in my 36 years of college coaching, I've never been to a high school dual match.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine a football, basketball, baseball coach saying the same thing? So, a lot of your best players don't play. But let me tell you what they did in California years ago. Just giving you some ideas. There's some great ideas. But everybody used to play in the 80s. They played the California high school tennis. Well, one of my players who was from there said, the best system for development I've ever seen. He said, Coach, what we would do is we would have four singles players, two doubles teams. You'd have six matches on six courts. Your number one, two, three, and four played one set against every one of the other four guys on the other side. So you played four singles sets. Doubles would play two sets against one team, two sets against another. Well, everybody played four sets. We had a running scoreboard of how many sets we won. And whoever won the most sets won the team match. But he says it was the best thing ever for player development. But the point is this goes back to, do you want participation or do you want performance? And John, I'm saying to you that you can have both. But you've got to understand that dual match tennis is a participation activity, and it's good for team camaraderie, but it is not good. It's horrible. I'll go on record. Team tennis is horrible for player development. Horrible. And tournament tennis, if you had eight teams come together every two weekends to compete, let's see, that would be eight times. I don't care if it's four players from the team or six or eight. Boy, as a college coach, I'd go out and watch that. I'd want to see that number five player that's breaking out of the pack and becomes a player that one weekend. So I think he could be better. It's a sleeping giant again, and I think the kids need the challenge, and you need your best players playing high school tennis instead of saying, well, we're not, you know, we're not going to play because it doesn't do any good for my game.
And that is a problem. And in fairness, some of the associations have to take responsibility. I mean, I remember the FHSAA years ago would sit there and have a fine if you didn't have your roster in, and the players would go to California the same time we're playing, and if they lost in the first round, they'd come back and they complained it was a $250 fine. So we lowered the fine, and, you know, so I think we were guilty too. Life is for choices, and you have to make choices. Our first year of running the FHS TCA high school all-star tournament, we had college coaches there. We looking at our kids. The USTA runs the designated the same weekend. Well, as a college coach, where are you going to come to our all-star team event, or are you going to go to the
They compete
against us instead of working with us, and that, you know, that's one of my complaints.
Well, let me say this too: the really puzzling thing about the USTA, and I learned over a period of years that if I'd have several late bloomers, I'll give you an example: Jay Berger now is in charge of men's tennis for the USTA. But, you know, as a player, they never helped him. As a player, they didn't like his funny game. Well, he got to 7 in the world. You know, Mark Dixon, they never helped. I had a player named Mitch Springlemeyer in the late 90s. Mitch was National Senior Player of the Year, and he won. He was the only player in history to win the Van Nostrand Award for the best development, best chance to pro. He was also ranked as the number one player from the United States. All right, I wrote at least 5 letters to try to get help from the USTA for him, and they just, well, we like his game, however. Now, the point was, it wasn't that he wasn't good enough, but this is the point, too, about high school tennis in Florida and why they don't help you. If I work for the USTA and I say, look, I'm going to stick my neck out here, I believe in this kid. He's only 13 in college tennis, but he's the number one American. And look at how much he's improved. I'm going to stick my neck out for him. Do you see again that the leadership does not take a chance? We need some type of a middle training arena. My last year, my assistant coach was player that grew up in Florida, and he was the number one doubles player in America, but he was a short guy. He actually served for the match against Jack Sock right after college and down at the Lipton. But he was my assistant coach, and sort of the same thing with him, but he didn't have an opportunity. He went to Duke. He didn't have an opportunity to continue to play because basically there wasn't just that middle ground. Now, I've got to say there's a guy named Stephen Armitage who is doing a fantastic job with the college players in the USTA. They're recognizing it. But the point is they're not after late bloomers because, if I go for a late bloomer, my neck is stuck out there. And if they don't pan out, it's on me. And if they pan out, well, how good was he anyway? He's not really what we're at. Well, we have hundreds of players that fall through the cracks that need to be developed. And Stephen Armitage and Jay and those guys, because they're recognizing that somewhat. But in high school tennis, you guys need to be recognized as the sleeping giant for player development down there. But they're not going to do it with dual match tennis. Dual match tennis, you know, is not about player development. So they recognize that, too. Players don't get better in dual match tennis. And if you use no ad scoring and 10-point tiebreaks, abbreviated stuff, that's shameful, first of all, to the game of tennis. But players, you have too many abstract or too many what a skewed results. You know, no ad scoring and all that stuff. The best players don't win. So you really don't know, John, if you are the best player when you win in no ad. You know, it's awful. It's just awful what they're doing there.
Now, Coach, do you remember it only lasted a couple of years, the USTA LET program, Local Excellence Tennis?
Sorry, I say that again, John, because I didn't understand.
It's a long time ago, almost 20 years, I guess, but the USTA had a program called the Local Excellence Tennis Program, and basically they took a coach in every county, and it was for the junior level to the high school. I thought it was a pretty good program. The problem was they just abandoned it. They never gave it a chance to run. I know they had some problems, some of the tennis pros that wanted to give up a student, but there was agreements that you made, because I was the coach in our county that did that, but you had to agree, you know, you weren't going to change players' grip. You weren't going to work with the coach, the person working with. But the idea was to get that person more training, and it was all-around training. But, the first year, after the first year, we were supposed to get the kids 3 days a week. Then it was the pros complained that they don't see the kids enough, so they reduced it to 2 days a week. And by the third year, it was gone. I say it's gone. They stopped supporting it. I was just wondering if you were familiar with that and what you thought.
Look, I think the USTA, they have some wonderful people working there, and they're puzzled too. Why are we losing all of our players? I mean, we do a fantastic job to the kids who are 15 years old, 16 years old, and then there's a big drop-off, and there's a few reasons for that. But to go to your point, I think they recognize high school tennis is the sleeping giant, but also rural tennis. Do you know that 73% of all professional athletes come from towns of less than 50,000 people? Tennis could be very, very big in rural communities. However, where the breakdown comes is they say, well, there's not enough qualified pros. Well, you know, there's not enough this, there's not enough that. Now, I don't want to say this to toot my own horn, but, John, I grew up, I never had a tennis lesson, okay? And the number one player on my college team never had a tennis lesson. But what we did have was incentives to get better. We had a lot of tournaments. I played my first year at age 13 with a Western forehand upside-down backhand, same grip on both sides, and an old man walked up to me and said, son, you might try this. I said, oh, okay, and I started playing a little ping pong with the right grips, a continental grip. So the point is the, and I'm not just using this as an example, but we overdo the, I don't want to say it's the excuse that, oh, there's not a teacher in this town. We need tournaments. We need a Pied Piper in every town. We need somebody with the enthusiasm. My golly, there's a place in South Georgia where the coach is he's helping six counties down there. But we've all seen a Bobby Curtis type people. You know, we need those kind of people. We need like you, John. You're so on fire for tennis and for helping. But now here's the point I want to make. We don't need systems. We need incentives. Incentives in the form of competition. Kids play for, and this is very, very important, two primary reasons. They play for rivalries and tournaments of heritage. And we have dumbed down both of those with this point system the USTA has done. You know, it's awful. The biggest mistake USTA has made in 20 years is the point system, because kids don't play for points. And the other thing is there's no accountability. There is no accountability for these kids with the losing. On one of J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis radio show, he had Tim Wilkerson on one time, and Tim Wilkerson was saying, when I was a young man, youngster, if when I was 13 or 14, if I lost to somebody, I would wait a whole year and train a whole year not to lose to somebody again. Now, people say, oh, it's too much pressure. No, kids play because they don't want to lose to other kids. It's tennis is a pecking order sport. You want to be better than other kids. You want to be better than the next guy. And in my park when I grew up, there was a guy named John the Fireman. We had old George. He had to beat old George first, then John the Fireman, then we had John the Cop. Then we had a guy named Paul Ditzenberger. And if you ever beat Paul Ditzenberger, that was the way that kept you playing. You went to the backboard, and you that's what stimulated you, John. So where we're making the mistakes now is in these small towns, we need a Pied Piper. I came up with a program called Small Town Tennis USA, and I took it to one of our associations here a couple years ago, and I tried a pilot program. But what you have is I got three players on my team, the lower level guys, who were like a 5, 6, 7 player, and I introduced them to a, they're supposed to do an apprenticeship at a town, small town. There, I picked three towns, one in Georgia, two in South Carolina, and they were going to do an apprenticeship. And the idea was these guys aren't going to play pro tennis, but let me put this number 8 guy on my team in a small town, and he works for the community center, and he goes there. He's in charge of tennis. He learns how to coach. He learns how to teach. He learns how to be a leader. And with that, the interest would, I think, go to the roof. We'd be training kids in smaller towns, and we'd also be grooming our next set of coaches. So it didn't pan out because a couple of the kids wanted to do something else in the summer, the head of the organization told me, a small town tennis, U.S., a small town tennis, that could hurt somebody's feelings. I go, are you kidding me? who was the guy? Who was the guy at John Mellencamp? I was born in this small town, right? it's about pride. You don't want to lose to other people when you're from these small towns. And golly, so, John, we can do better. But any of you coaches listening out there, I don't care if you're a football coach, linebacker coach, never played tennis in your life. I'll give you 10 names about 10 guys who didn't know anything about tennis that spurred lots and lots of kids on to play tennis. What you do is you put together tournaments, incentives, make it important, and it becomes important to the kids. But if you let anybody on the team, that no-cut tennis is a killer. If you let anybody on the team, you'll find out you won't have anybody on the team, pretty soon. If you, again, you champion the weak, you weaken the real champions. You have to make it important, make it hard, where it's not an after-school activity. Like, you want kids that want to be in the orchestra, not in the band. Kids that want to fall in love with the violin and or the tennis racket, not somebody that just picks it up for a couple weeks, a year, and then puts the racket down because it's too hard and they don't like to compete. All youngsters want to compete, but some of us, including myself, have to learn how to compete.
Yep, well, it's something that and learning, and competing can be fun. I think this is what we forget sometimes. I mean, fun, it's not fun to lose, but after a while, when you're competing and you understand why you're losing and you're willing to work at it, it is fun. Sometimes I think we don't explain fun enough.
It's fun to win, but it's fun to give your best. But again, I told a youngster yesterday, I was talking to a young man that I've known a long time, and he sort of pulled the plug in the second set when he's playing practice sets. And I told him, look, one thing you better learn is that, we always say wins should never go to your head, losses should never go to your heart. Actually, wins should go to your heart for confidence, losses go to your head for learning. But the point I told him was, I said, look, when you give your best, it's going to hurt, and it's going to hurt bad, but that will motivate you. But here's the thing. The pain will be like a broken bone. And once it heals, you're going to be twice as strong. So the next time, you're only half as afraid, and you're twice as strong. If you don't give your best and you lose, it's going to hurt. But the problem, it's going to be like a disease or an illness that you carry with you for a long, long time. And that's the tragedy when we get our kids to half engage, or it's no-cut tennis, there's no skin in the game. In other words, look, if it doesn't matter much, they let matches go. They don't learn how to engage their heart. So the point is, people are, fun is giving your all in a noble cause with other people who are like-minded. And what ends up happening, there's nothing more fantastic than working together for a cause. John, I'm working on an article right now, and your listeners, watch for this article. Okay, now listen now, but I want you to get it right. The three drugs that I got from playing tennis when I was a youngster. All right.
Three drugs from playing tennis.
Dopamine, adrenaline, and endorphins. Dopamine rush from learning how to hit the ball perfectly. It's like hearing the best song of your life. It's like the first kiss you ever have from, you know, when you're young. It's like scoring a basket when you hit a perfect swing. The dopamine rush that you get from hitting a perfect tennis ball is what spurred me, especially when we had wood rackets. The dopamine rush has been taken away now by the technology. However, you still get a dopamine rush from the great execution of hitting a golf ball, baseball, tennis ball. The adrenaline now, listen, adrenaline, dopamine grows exponentially as you do it more, the sport more and more. Adrenaline, you only have a tank that is so big, and it's however the good Lord wired you. You may have a big tank for adrenaline or a small tank for adrenaline. Once it's out, it's out. The point is that some people are just not competitive. I had a big adrenaline tank. I got a lot of adrenaline rush from competing. Okay, the endorphins you only get when you train to a level that you're in good shape. When you're in great shape, you're healthy for life. You know what that is like. And that endorphin rush that you get is probably the greatest feeling in the world. After I run my guys pretty hard still, I say, guys, well, two things I said. I hate to see you in pain, but I hate more seeing you guys lose. And I said, 30 minutes from right now, you're going to feel like you're on top of the world from that great workout you just got. And once people start training hard, they understand that. So you like that?
Very good. Very good. No,
I
want
to see people understand, though.
Whereabouts are we going to be able to read this? You know, it's funny, but you remember
I've got it on my desk. I've got about 4 or 5 articles that I'm working on that I want to try to get out there. And the thing is, I've been fighting so hard with this against this NOAAD scoring, the dumbing down, the, you know, all of the abbreviated scoring systems. I've been fighting so hard now for 2 to 3 years. Almost all my writing has been, I call it defensive writing, because I'm trying to help us save our scoring system. The dumb down of the scoring system is just awful. And I've
let me make a suggestion to you. I was talking to my editor of the Florida Tennis, because one of my articles, they repeat it in there instead of an article that was supposed to be in. And when I told him, he asked me who was going to be on the radio show. And when I told him, he said, well, make sure you tell him Jim March said
hello. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
He says he used to send me stuff every now and then that I could sit there and print. I haven't heard from him in a long time. Let's get something in Florida Tennis Magazine.
Okay. I will tell Jim this is a good challenge. I will work on these articles, but really Project Dumbdown might be. And the thing is, when you talk about like a Project Dumbdown, you worry, it's too negative, they do this, they do that. Well, everybody out there needs to understand that we're fighting to preserve 132 years of heritage in our sport. We have the most wonderful sport in the world. Now, the thing is, because we have a few people now that have computers and they think they got a slick system, they can push through no ad scoring or these tiebreakers. Well, this stuff is so detrimental to the game. You know, John, I have kids at my camp that I will say, raise your hand if you've played a third set. This year, only 3 out of 50 kids have played a third set, playing this nonsensical 10-point tiebreaker. It's just awful.
Wow.
And it doesn't, all of the learning takes place in that third set. And in this no ad scoring, I have an article, there's 23 reasons why it's bad. But I've got a list of the biggest 10 reasons, but I'm going to give you one reason that it is. Hang on, I got to say hi to my kids here. Hey guys.
Hey. Well,
sorry,
folks,
you hear the coach's priorities.
No, it's all good. Priorities. And his kids are his priorities, so just remember that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Coach, go on.
Well,
I was talking to
John. Let me just. I can wind up here in a few minutes, but let me just say this about the. You don't want to be negative, but the thing is, you have to understand that this no ad and 10-point, they're not rules of tennis. Number one, but number two, the dumb down. The obvious thing is the conditioning. The obvious thing is that cheating becomes paramount. These are negative things. But one of the things that nobody understands about tennis, they say, this no ad is exciting. Well, excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Tennis is about drama. It's like the world, you watch baseball right now, it's like the eighth or ninth inning drama. Drama intensifies with each denial. And the point, I can ask one of my players, I always ask him, when was match point? And they'll go, okay, coach, 2-1, second set. I had a long game. It was about a 12-15 point game. After I won that game, the guy sort of went away. There was separation. The problem is that now with no ad scoring, you never have separation. The problem with no ad scoring now is that the points, it's sort of like making a shot clock in basketball 23 seconds. It would be like baseball being two strikes, 3 balls. It changes the whole dynamic of how hard it is to carry the lead. Momentum control. It dumbs down the chess. It's just on and on. So I'm going to try to send Jim also the thing. And you high school coaches, dump that no ad scoring if you want your kids to learn the game of tennis. The best player, it skews the results too. Your best players have to take too many losses that they shouldn't in that game. And parity without skill set is wrong in this sport. You know, parity should happen because of skill set, not because of scoring system.
Coach, we've gone on for an hour and 20 minutes now, and I've got a little business I have to do.
Okay.
My biggest thing is I've got to push for more tournaments. That's the assignment you've given me that I will spread to our coaches. And before I can conduct some business, a closing remarks you would like to have.
The last one is all coaches out there, remember, it's not about systems. It's about getting your youngsters not just compliant, but committed and inspired. Inspired enthusiasm. The word enthusiasm comes from the Greek derivative entheos, the spirit of God within. So you get compliant to committed, to inspiration, to listen. Everybody out there, look up reticular activating system on YouTube. It's a 13-minute and 1-second video. This is where we have to have our kids. The RAS, reticular activating system, needs to be engaged. That's when it's the law of attraction, or it's the filtering system, that when something becomes really important to you, you will start looking for every way to get better that you can in every way possible to get to understand the sport at a deeper level. We need our RAS locked children locked in, and you do not do that by Project Dumbdown. Okay? Jim, John, thank you so very much for having me on.
Thank you, Coach. It's been a blessing to have you share this with us. And, folks, this is what I talk about. There's coaches out there. I think you can tell why Coach Creasy is a legend and why he's in the College Hall of Fame is because, you know, his excitement of the game. I mean, his willing to go out and fight for ideas. And this is what I tell you, and this is what the one thing about Jason – which I enjoyed having this radio broadcast with him, is the same remarks that with Tennis Magazine is go out and, you know, share your opinions if you want, but respectfully listen to the other alternative and go out and defend them. Don't sit there and put anybody down. And that's what you see with Chuck Creasy. He's always willing. He's going to defend his position, but he's always interested in hearing yours, too. And this is what I try to share. The paradigm as we know it isn't going to be the same forever. I mean, General Motors supposedly controlled America. Well, General Motors is no longer an American-owned company even. So, you know, things do change, but don't throw things away. We've got to take who our leaders are, and we have to get them more involved. And most of the time, people like Coach Creasy, who is so busy, a man, he does so many things, yeah, he'll take the time to come on our show. So, I mean, I think I've been really blessed. Let's go back in a couple of things. I apologize for last week. Believe it or not, that wasn't my fault that we didn't have the radio show. The problem was in Houston. Number two, we had two problems I discovered last week in talking to Jim Marks at Tennis Magazine. I told you there would be an article in this issue of Florida Tennis, what makes a better coach. The article wasn't there. It was a mistake. They did last month the issue article over again, which was a nice article, but I'm not sure it was worth repeating. But he does promise me that this article will be in the next issue, what makes a better coach. If you remember on the radio show with Scott Williams, we got off track a little talking about the Almighty and what he contributes to coaching. Some people talked about if it was a question was if I was going to make it a religion show. I listened to it again. It wasn't about religion, but I think most of the coaches, when we're looking for help, we look to the same place. And that is to the Almighty. So Scott will be on again on the 5th of November. And hopefully when we get into, and we will talk about his tennis ministry. But what we'll be talking about mostly is the tennis team coaching certification program that he helped me put together and why the tennis team coach is a special person. I came into coaching tennis as a high school tennis, as a tennis pro. I came in with 3 months' worth of lesson plans, and I wound up coming home and ripping them up the first night I was going to school all over again. Next week, we're going to have Tarek Merchant on. I'm recruitable. We talk a lot about how to train kids, how to get them ready, mastering their strokes, mastering the time on the court. But we don't talk enough about the opportunities that they need to get into college and we will do that with him. On the 12th of November, Coach Greasy talked about Texas and their association. We have the executive director, Steve Buck, coming on the show on the 12th. I was blessed to be able to last year to go out to Texas with the workshop. They do a great job. When we grow up, we want to be just like them. I was invited out again this year. Unfortunately, their workshop is the same as ours. I'm not going to be able to go out there. But Steve has a lot to share what they're doing with Texas, and especially with the two seasons, one the team season and one the tournament season. So that is an important issue. And on the 19th of November, we will have Will Adams, who does the tennis for the Florida High School Athletic Association. Does a nice job. He has just completed his video, which we will be putting up on the website. So you will have all the information that not everything you need to know. You have to stay tuned to our social media and theirs and read it, but he updates you on the key things. And Will did it for us last year. He'll be doing it again for us this year. So I look forward to seeing you next year. Remember, at the FACA workshop, December 10th through 12th in Daytona Beach, Wilson will be passing out the Coach of the Year awards in 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A. Team tennis will be providing uniforms for one team for 2016, and those members in 2015 earned them for the coming team. Vertimax and the Raptor will be there. And if you don't have a Dean Street in your area, in your community, please go to DeanStreetInsurance.com. Dean Street will be sitting there passing out the Community Service Award with us this year. Billie Jean King Eye Coach will be there again with us this year. And so will Lisa Dotson be one of our presenters at the workshop. And, of course, her video on the Total Serve is on our website, www.fhsa.org. Well worthwhile viewing. Great viewing for not just for the coaches, but for your players and parents. And also on our website, you get a discount through the Total Serve. So, but we are blessed to have her as one of the presenters at the workshop. So, and of course, Florida Tennis, they are a continuous part and starting in the next issue of Florida Tennis, there will be a new section called the High School Rewind. And we will not just be providing some of the information from Florida, but also from Texas, from California, from the Missouri Valley. I was hoping to mention that with Coach Greasy, seeing that he knew the high school people in Carolina. Coach, are you still there? I see him on, but he's probably went away.
I'm still here. I'm still here. What's
the one thing I was just talking about, Florida Tennis Magazine, and we're doing a high school rewind. Do you know any of the high school coaches in the Carolinas that could provide information to me? Have information coming from Texas?
Of course, there's a lot of them. I'll get a couple guys who are hard workers to contact you.
I appreciate that. Well, thanks for being on. Thanks for listening. Please tell your friends about next week's show. Please take the time to go to Chuck Reese's show, and I look forward to talking with you next week. You have a blessed week, and we will talk again next week. Bye now.